A goal down to Birmingham, a fifth defeat in a row was looming for Reading FC. Doom and gloom is being typed out onto Twitter accounts across Berkshire, waiting for the final whistle to confirm their worst fears. And yet, young Prince Jamari Clark stepped forward to deliver a stunning salvo off the bench and snatch three glorious points for the Royals. Welcome to the Tireless Den Podcast, episode 278 with your host Mark May. This week, talking about quite a very busy week for the club, actually, with Veljko Paunovic's coronavirus test, followed by a defeat to Millwall, and what looked like it might be a defeat to Birmingham as well. But with two goals late on, Reading took all 3 points from St Andrews. So big win to discuss this week. And to do that with me is Dave Handbags-Harris. Handbags, how's it going, mate?
I'm all right. After a few pints this afternoon, a celebratory. Yeah, I'm over the moon at the moment, as I think you'd expect after such a... Well, it's not often we come from behind to win, is it? And it's always nice when we do, particularly given the interesting relationship we have with Birmingham over the last few years. So yeah, rather nice.
Yeah, it was just satisfying. I found as I was kind of at work during the game, so I was kind of following it online and with the Sky Sports News and stuff, and just a game that seemed to be going all against Reading, and then something happened at halftime, and suddenly I just from following things, I had a sudden confidence that Reading were going to get a draw out of this game, and how wrong I was, because it's turned out to be all 3 points. So let's talk about that in the recap in just a second. Big thank you, as always, to our Patreon subscribers and our sponsors, ZCZ Films, as we go through this week's show. We'll have the mailbag and news bites later on, but let's talk now about Birmingham 1, Reading 2.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Well, let's brush off the Birmingham game for 1 second and go chronologically through this week and talk about the first big news, which happened, I think, about a couple of hours before we were due to play Millwall. They got confirmed that Veljko Paunovic had coronavirus. I think he had very mild symptoms. I think he's all well and everything like that. And he's been doing the matches, both matches this week, remotely. I mean, we're all working remotely these days, so why not football managers? And he's been doing the press conferences by Zoom from his living room and everything. So Handbags, Paunovic has been out of action. And yeah, I suppose in a way, the only thing that we have kind of missed is his physical presence, because everything else he's still been able to do.
Pretty much business as usual. Yeah. I'm not sure how that really affects going on in the training ground. I can imagine that they have a dialogue. I mean, we spoke off air that we'll touch on my little visit to the to Bearwood, but they have a training meeting in the morning with all the coaches and the analysts. But I can imagine that he's dialed into that and let him know what basically he wants to do in agreement with the other coaches and whatnot. So I can't really see that there'd be too much difference, given that he's got complete comms with the first team squad. Sorry, first team squad, first team coaching staff, and Mitrovic. I can't see that there's too much really that's affected him or affected the ongoings at the club too much. But sounds like that, you know, on a personal level, he's not suffered too badly. I mean, I had coronavirus in December last year, and that was not pleasant. I can tell anybody it was not pleasant, obviously pre-vaccine. And I had fairly mild symptoms, so I know what it's like to have it. But if he's double vaccinated, then, or you know, even with some form of immunity, then it's not affected him too badly, and hopefully he'll be on the touchline again in the next week or so.
Yeah, well, I mean, they did say that he's double jabbed, and that he's obviously got the international break now to kind of, you know, get through it and get through that period of isolation, test negative, and get back on the training pitch, because there's not too many Reading players away this next fortnight, so a good chance for him to get working with them. And even without Paunovic on the touchline, Reading took the bold step on Tuesday, going to a five at the back with Tom Holmes, Liam Maughan, Scott Dann as the centre-backs. We also missed Andy Yeardon, which I think was COVID-related, Till Ashcroft, the young academy player coming in at right back. Danny Drinkwater also disappeared this week because of an injury, because we haven't got enough of those. So Millwall was just such a difficult game. And Reading, I suppose, the first half at least, probably wasn't that different from the Birmingham first half. And maybe on a different night, John Swift had a chance to make it 1-1. And maybe on a different night, he takes that chance and we go and get a win at Millwall. It's just the sort of game that Reading in their current guise, with the current the lack of players and the academy players at that point, were making steps up, but not completely revolutionising the team. At that point, it was just a game that got away from Reading, and I suppose it was just one too many.
Yeah, quite. It's one of those games that when things are going wrong for you and you're on a downer, you end up losing. There wasn't anything between the two teams, to be honest with you. Any game to Millwall is always a difficult game. We know what everybody knows what it's like there with the atmosphere. It's very enclosed. But yeah, I was disappointed to go on to lose it in the last 15 minutes, really, with some sloppy defending, in all honesty. I'm sure that the individual defenders will be disappointed. Individual defenders concerned will be disappointed with how the goal came about. It ended up being a completely free tap in for obviously ex-Reading loanee. What's his name?
Benikophobe, the former championship-winning, former championship-winning yes. Loanee as well, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. But it was just one of those games, and you can't dismiss it. Because it's a defeat, and there was obviously improvement to be made with any defeat. But it was one of those games where when things are going wrong, you tend to end up on the losing end in a tight game. It was tough to take in some ways.
Yeah, definitely. Certainly a game from the people that I spoke to went, it was almost every worst nightmare in a sense, because it was what you thought was going to happen. You kind of go in as if you're going in with a bit pessimistic mindset, you do think, oh, well, probably going to lose a couple of 50-50s, get turned over and then struggle to score. And that's ultimately what happened, which is just kind of gutting as a way of losing. And I mean, if we're playing the blame game for the goal, I wasn't particularly impressed with Baba. The left back does lose his man for the cross and it kind of all crumbles from there. And I suppose that because we're able to discuss that game with the hindsight of knowing we beat Birmingham, 3 points from those two away games this week is a good return. I think that's more than respectable. Ultimately, you know, it kind of sounds weird, but it's, if you offered two draws, some people might say that two draws is better than a disheartening loss and a nice win, because you kind of stay unbeaten, you keep chugging along. But, you know, 3 points in the bag, thanks to the Birmingham game. Ashcroft was out because Yeardon was back at the right wing back. The goal, again, it's a really bad goal, to be fair. Liam Moore, just a complete error, passing towards Southwood. In the third minute, Hogan takes it round to the goalkeeper and scores. I have to say, I mean, I'm not hugely a Moore fan over the last couple of years. I do think that his defending kind of on the ground in particular hasn't been great, but I personally will cut him some slack for this goal, because generally speaking, Liam Moore passing around at the back over the last couple of years, I think he's been as good as any championship defender. So this is a rare mistake, and I personally won't link it to the kind of other mistakes he's been making. But nonetheless, it was a real disappointing way to start the game, wasn't it?
It was. It's difficult to understand, really, just exactly what goes through a defender's mind when that happens. I mean, the actual incident itself, it's an error. It's a bog standard error, and he hasn't put enough on the pass back to Southwood. And it's Scott Hogan. We know what Scott Hogan's all about. He's a quick, nippy striker. It was up to Liam Moore to make sure of that pass there and then. I think it's not, you're right insofar as he hasn't made too many errors when it comes to sort of passing the ball here and there along the ground and whatnot. His errors tend to come when he needs to face up to an opposition, particularly with his blocking shots. And don't get me wrong, it's not something that he's afraid to do. I mean, we've seen it on so often, so many occasions that he blocks crosses, he gets his face, his body, anything in the way of a shot. But it's almost like, if you can imagine a striker who has time to take a chance or to if he's given time with a chance and misses his line, but can almost Traversinha like, I suppose, the first instinctive shot is it almost always ends up with a shot on target. In the same way with Liam Moore, if he doesn't have time to block a shot, to make a tackle or whatever, he's absolutely superlative. But if he has that time, it just tends to make the wrong decision. And we saw that with Bournemouth just over a week ago, where I'm not sure exactly, you know, what he was thinking, but he was far too far to the right of goal for the shot, and just left the southwards left shoulder, left the left hand side of the goal open. That's the way that I look at Liam Moore, is that, as I say, if he's got time, then I worry. Time to close a defender down, because he just leaves too, ultimately it's space. He leaves too much space, I think, in my opinion. A lot of the Chris Gunter type attributes. And Chris Gunter would back off and back off and back off and lead 6 yards between him and an attacker. And I just get the impression that Liam Moore is very, very similar. Doesn't close the space down, and is quite happy to trust his judgment with blocking, and doesn't always get it right, particularly if he's got that time to make that decision.
No, I agree. I do think I've mentioned on the show before that I feel that when he's backing off, it does seem that he doesn't, you know, at some point you have to put a foot forward, don't you, and actually try and make a tackle, or at least, you know, if you are backing off continually, you guide successfully the man into the corner, for example, or away from goal, but it doesn't seem to be what he does. And yeah, this one...
You've got to make the attacker make a decision, haven't you?
Yeah, he does. And that is something that maybe he doesn't make those attackers. The attackers are free to do what they want, effectively. And Reading in this game fell behind. It certainly looked like first half, nothing much was really going to change about that. We get into the break, and Paunovic makes the decision to change to a kind of 4-1-4-1 out of the five man and put Yeardom a bit further forward, a bit more of a traditional right midfielder, which I think he's got the attributes for. If we want to play that on the, you know, when we come back from the break, I'll be happy to have Yeardom as the right winger, because I think I don't think he lacks particularly anything that a right winger at this level is meant to, or, you know, often has. So, that worked in one aspect. And the second aspect is Jamari Clark came on for George Puskas. I mean, it's a debate that has obviously rumbled on the whole season, but it's quite clear, isn't it, that Paunovic making that change at halftime, that is what a frustrated manager does. That is what a manager who has lost patience effectively will do. I mean, I remember back in the day, the seeing managers make changes at 30 minutes and 25 minutes if things are really going badly. And that doesn't tend to happen so much in modern day football. But being hooked at halftime is that equivalent, isn't it? It's Paunovic saying, you know what, I've given you even that little chance is a chance too much. You haven't taken it. On comes Clark. And, well, the rest is history.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, two goals up on the Clark Puskas scoring count. I feel a little bit for George Puskas, because we don't play to his strengths, but, and this is the big but, we have a number of attacking players in that lineup, and we play to their strengths, and it's up to attacking to strikers, as far as I'm concerned, to play to the strengths of the attacking players that we already have. There's George Puskas has spectacularly failed to adapt to three managers now, Gomez, Bowen and Paunovic. And even when he does have chances, you're not always convinced he's going to get a shot, even a shot on bloody target. He has scuffed his lines so often that it's unreal. And for an international striker who cost an absolute bomb in championship terms, really, for Reading Football Club terms, from Inter, it's it's not particularly great. It's not a good look. And I'm frustrated with the man as much as any other Reading fan. Do I think he's going to come good? Absolutely not. And unfortunately for Reading Football Club, bearing in mind that he's almost certainly on a hefty wage, he's only halfway through his contract. He signed a 5-year contract. And so, you know, it comes to the point where you have to look at him. Is he going to do we just cut our losses with him? Or what do you do? What do you do with him? Because we've only got, you know, it's not as though we're going to be playing loads and loads of balls in behind. He can only play one way, George Puskas. He needs balls in behind. He needs the ball in front of him. And we don't play that way. We simply don't play that way. We play a very, very central game, which is why Lucas Joao is so superlative with the way that we play, because he's able to receive the ball with his back to goal and, you know, and be able to play in the centre of the pitch. George Puskas can't do that. And unfortunately, we don't have natural wide players. We have Halilovic, we have Ijaria, we have John Swift in the middle. They're players that are going to be playing balls into feet with back to goal. It's as simple as that. We don't play to George Puskas's strength. And for an international striker to only be able to play one way, sorry, but as far as I'm concerned, no, that's not good enough. And it's no surprise that he was hoiked off at half time. And I'm just so pleased that we've got an academy product who today has taken the ball by the horns. He hasn't pulled up any trees so far up until this afternoon, Jamari Clark. But he scored twice today. And that for me is enough to warrant a starting place in 2 weeks' time. So, and George Puskas is going to be back on the bench. Puskas probably won't be happy. He's probably looking at himself now thinking, what the fuck have I done? Coming to Reading Football Club. But yeah, as far as I'm concerned, Puskas is a busted flush. If he doesn't adapt his game and actually start integrating himself into the style of play, the way that we play more, then he's I'm done with him.
This is the thing, isn't it, for me as well, when it comes to Clark, is we saw in two very brief flashes, and me and Westie spoke last week saying that, you know, Westie was certainly saying, in his opinion at least, that the kids aren't ready and stuff like that, which is certainly at that point about Clark was a totally reasonable thing to say. And even Paunovic obviously has come out after the game today and said, let's not go mad. He's still got a long way to go. He's got to learn from the senior players ahead of him. And this is all absolutely true. But what we did see, certainly in comparison to Puskas, and let's go through the two goals. The first one, the ball comes in. Clark gets in front of his man. It's good movement in the box. He makes contact with the header and it's on target. And sometimes, you know, we so often say about strikers, just get it on target, make the goalkeeper work. And it just so happens that the goalkeeper's run off his line and it's a bit of an empty net. And that's great. that's absolutely fine. If that's how the goal goes in, then I think everyone takes that because the striker has actually made an impact to make it happen. The second goal, I mean, John, always worth mentioning that John Swift is still class. His impact in it is obviously pretty big, gets into the box. Reading need three bites of the cherry that Paunovic actually says kind of took a few years off his life, I think he was what he said after the game, because Swift at the keeper, palms it again, keeper does pretty badly. The Birmingham defence don't react. One man, however, does react, and that's Jamari Clark. Great alertness, gets a shot off. Yeah, all right, straight at the goalkeeper, flaps it again, but he keeps going and then he does put it home in the end. At some point, you know, you've got to say fair play to the striker, even if the defence is going to kind of gift it to you. And you know, we're moving forward. Let's say for the next couple of weeks or next couple of games, we've got Clark up top. We aren't going to probably see him score hat-tricks, or he might not even score again for the rest of the season. But at least he has shown that there is something there to play off that the team can work around that I don't think Puskas did show.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And the worst thing that Reading fans can do is after three games, turn around and say, no, actually, Jamari Clark is not the answer. They need to get behind him now. He's, as far as I'm concerned, he's taken the chance that he's been given, the 45-minute chance. He's earned the right to play at least the next dozen or so games. just from that 45 minutes. Some people might be listening to this thinking, what the hell are you talking about? But you can't give an academy player 45 minutes here, 20 minutes there. Once he's shown he's got something about him, you've got to give him a good run in the side to be able to build himself up to the level that is required. And if he's not doing it after a dozen or so games, fine. Hoik him back out of the team and put him back on the bench. Absolutely fine with that. And then maybe give him a chance either later on in the season or early next season. Because we saw exactly the same with, I'm looking back 20 years now, but we saw the same with John Mackie. John Mackie came in, did well over the first three, four, five games, but was then given an absolutely torrid time by Neil Harris at Millwall. And they were 3-0 up at half-time in 2001, this was. He then bombed out of the team, but then he had 10 months out of the team then and actually played a critical part in a team that was promoted. So we see a slightly different circumstance with the John Mackie, but we see that, that players... It happens so often throughout the leagues that players are given a little run in the side, hoiked out of the team, and then put back in the team up, because they've learned and they've built up that level of knowledge and that confidence, and they adapt their game. They listen to their coaches' staff. They listen to the players that they're playing with, and it's a key point in a player's development. And we need to see the same with Jamari Clark. He's not going to. I don't think he's going to pull up any trees this season. He might score half a dozen goals. I'd put. But given the way that we're playing, given the way that George Puskas is playing, I'd suggest that might be, probably will be, half a dozen goals more than George Puskas in particular will score. Because Puskas just hasn't done it at all this season.
Another player that was coming to my mind then, as you're saying about John Mackie, was actually Sean Cummings. And we're going back only 10 years now for when he was in the team under Brendan Rodgers and he just looked awful, taken out. I think it was a good 6 months or so out of the team, and then came back, and then suddenly he was the first choice right back of a championship winning team because he had, taken the time out and learned and progressed as a footballer. And obviously Sean Cummings didn't really amount to much away from Reading and away from that team, but he played in the Premier League. You got given the credit, and especially from where he started under Brendan Rodgers, that is the kind of development. And hopefully that's the sort of thing that if Clark, as you say, very good chance he doesn't particularly make it in the next few weeks. But then it's a long road ahead. I think he's 18 years and 1 month old. Some people are saying he was Reading's youngest goal scorer today, which I've not verified, but I mean, probably is, because that is a pretty young age to be scoring goals at a championship level.
It's still Neil Webb.
Neil Webb was
17. He just turned 17 when he scored for Reading. In 1980, I think it was.
Yeah, well, there we go. But that's just a sign of you've got to go back that far to find a player scoring at this sort of age. And I mean, there's probably an argument. My final point on this is there's probably an argument to say that Puskas could benefit from the competition. Maybe Clark only lasts 60 minutes against Forest in a couple of weeks, gets taken off, Puskas comes on and scores a hat-trick. But I mean, the only thing I'd say about that is that Puskas has had probably one of the best strikers in the championship ahead of him for the last season and a half, and he's not really done much about that either. So we'll see with Puskas.
Exactly.
But we've got Clark now as the kind of first choice striker. I agree. I think at least 4 or 5 games is what I would give him, just to see what he can do and to see what the team can do around him. Funnily enough, the last time we had lost 4 in a row going into the Birmingham game. The last time Reading lost 5 in a row was in the Premier League in April 2013. So with that win, we ended the week where we started it in 16th. And usually at this point in the show, I'll hand it over to Veljko Paunović, but because of the COVID and everything like that, and also because we're doing this on a Saturday night after the game, he's not, the club haven't put up the clip of him talking yet. So I'll just read off what Paunović has said after the game. He said it was actually a real joy to watch our team play in the second half, which it wasn't in the first half. I was very upset with our passivity and complacency. At halftime, we had a chat over the phone in the meeting and made the changes, and both changes paid off, changing the formation and putting a young lad who we had time to build into the game where he could surprise an opponent who was complacent. Birmingham were very complacent and gave us opportunities to knock them, which we took. I'm very proud of the effort the The guys did a fantastic job in the second half, especially. Right then, let's go into the mailbag. Pretty thin mailbag this week, as you might imagine. Us doing it on a Saturday night. Everyone's down at the pub. So let's brush through that then and continue with the show.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
So, yes, not a huge mailbag this week because of our speediness in getting out and onto the show. So just the one question this week. And we've spoken about George Puskas, so I'm going to kind of move this into a different direction because Will Jones saying, is Puskas the new Simon Church? First season got a decent goal return, shows signs of promise. Second season declines, and then the third season becomes a bit of a joke, which... I mean, the comparison to Simon Church is interesting, handbags. And I wanted to talk about what other strikers Reading have, you know, kind of persisted with over the years. And it's not really worked out, or maybe eventually it does kind of work out. And I can't think of many players that we have kind of, yes, Puskas had an okay first year, but generally speaking, we have been, you know, we haven't tended to just keep players going for ages and ages. And it does make me think, actually, that if Puskas does really struggle this third season, that it will be his last, because the club will just be, you know, they'll just say that's that. And I can't think, I don't know what other sort of strikers you can think of that have endured similar runs at the club over the years.
I'm struggling to think of any, to be honest with you. I think it's a little bit harsh on Simon Church. He had a really good first season, a breakthrough season, 9-10, a reasonable second season, 10-11. And again, a reasonable third season, 11-12, in which he, well, in the first half of the season, he was partnered with Lafondra before Noel Hunt was fit. But it was the Premier League season. He you know, Simon Church was clearly not a Premier League footballer, and I think it was the right decision to not include him in the squad at that level. So a little bit harsh on him, but. You know, I'm struggling to think of any strikers where we've genuinely persisted with, because we've always had one, maybe two strikers who are really, really good for the level that we play at. And I'm looking back to Kerry Dixon, Trevor Senior, Jimmy Quinn, Trevor Morley, Lee Nogan, Stuart Lovell, Nicky Forster, Jamie Curran, Kevin Doyle, Dave Kitson. You know, that's a 20 years worth of strikers. Adam Lafondra, I mentioned him before, of course. But for players that have actually strikers who have actually been given chance after chance after chance and not really done it in the striking position, it's something that we don't really have too much of a history of.
I suppose you could say Sonny Aluko, but he's a winger and it was kind of different when it is a winger. The one striker who I'm actually thinking, in terms of record, who had a similar season was Matej Vidra, who had one really poor season, obviously the only really poor season, that the only one he was at Reading for. But that was a season of just completely not working, wasn't it? And obviously it's different when he's a lone player, but the thing with that was that he was a proven striker at this level. And obviously, you know, he scored today at Chelsea and he's always been a proven striker at this level. And that was a different case because that was Reading clearly weren't playing to his game plan. And you knew what that was and you knew how to make it work, but Reading just kind of steadfastly refused. Whereas this, I mean, Puskas, as we've spoken about earlier, that doesn't feel the case.
Yeah, quite. I think the fundamental difference, of course, with Vidra was that he was a lone player. And we need, when you, I think with my thinking of lone players, is that you need players to be able to sort of slot into your system. And of course, he was brought, well, the question is whether or not he was brought in by Steve Clarke or whether he was brought in over Steve Clarke's head. With him, say for that simple reason, it's slightly different. Whereas George Puskas was brought in to score goals within a system, obviously brought in by Jose Gomez. It's a difficult one because for Puskas in so many ways, but I still see no you know, after 2.5 years nearly, I see no attempt from him to change his game, adapt his game to the way that we play based around certain managers. You can blame that on managers themselves, or you can blame that on the player, you know, but we don't know. And this is where we need to look at what's going on at the training ground, because fans don't know what happens at the training ground, what's been said, what's been spoken. Has Paulo spoken to Puskás and Puskás has steadfastly refused or is unable to adapt? Or has Paulo said to him, keep doing what you're doing, it'll come? We don't know. We simply don't know. But whatever happens, you know, whatever way you look at it, George Puskás hasn't ripped up any trees. And he's, this season so far, and for most of last season, in fact, he's flunk. It's an absolute flunk. He's not playing to, you know, a reasonable international standard, as it were, because he's, you know, he plays for a decent country. That's, you know, Romania are no mugs. You know, it's not as though that he's playing for a country that have, you know, they don't have any sort of whipping boys. He plays for a decent country, but you know, it's a frustration, and yeah, it is what it is, unfortunately. And there's only one person that can change that, and that is George Puskás.
Well, and it's also a bit of an indication as to the situation a club have found themselves in. You know, there's more talking points deduction, everything this week. Puskás' signing was definitely a big contribution to the club's financial situation, because the club felt they could do it. They felt they're getting a good deal. They obviously weren't. I'm just having a quick look, just to kind of end this point on comparisons to other players. I'm flicking through the kind of historical statistics, as it were, on Wikipedia, so obviously not a great source, but I mean, he's got 18 goals in, I think it's 82 appearances now for Reading, and you can kind of compare that. That's roughly the same record that Darius Henderson had, which Handbags, I'm sure you'll probably be able to inform us a bit more on that. Lucas Zhao has got 10 more goals in about 20 less appearances. John Daddy Bodvarsson actually has only 2 fewer goals from about 30 fewer appearances, and he wasn't a prolific goal scorer. So I think it just goes to show that he is almost entering that territory of almost being Reading's potentially biggest striker flop, which hopefully won't prove to be the case, because hopefully he'll end the season really well and be at Reading a long time and win many trophies, but it doesn't appear that way. And I wanted to check in. Obviously, Henderson, not a player that I hugely watched myself, so I wondered what sort of comparison you'd say, obviously, whether the numbers kind of fare are true for that.
Well, you've got to remember that Darius Henderson, again, came directly out of our academy, or our YTS as it was then. He was 18 when he made his debut, and he scored, was it twice, I think it was, against Luton in the League Cup. Yeah, there were a few League Cup goals involved in that. But he, his breakthrough season was 2001-02, and Alan Pardew gave him a reasonable chance. And he, again, funnily enough, his breakthrough game, really, was Peterborough away, similar to today with Jamari Clark. He scored 2 late goals to win the game 2-1, having gone 1-0 down early on. And Darius Henderson's career really never really looked back from that. It was Steve Coppell who let Henderson go. I think Henderson went to Gillingham for small money. There might have been a small fee involved. But that was 2004, I think it was. So he had 3 years at Reading in the first team. You know, bearing in mind that Reading had 3 strikers who were ahead of Henderson at the time in Kieran Forster and Butler. Butler didn't pull up any trees in the first part of that season either, although in, I think it was the October or the November, he ended up with a broken leg, didn't come back until Brentford. So it was Forster and Kieran. But Henderson offered something different, because Forster being the very direct player, Kieran the fox in the box, Henderson being the big, tall, strong striker who very much the Jimmy Quinn mould, I suppose, and similar to Lucas Zhao in some ways. Henderson was something totally different. again, totally different to George Puskas. Again, Jamari Clark, I've seen a little bit of him. Again, he's tall, needs to bulk out a bit. Is he going to be the player to sort of hold up the ball, bring other players into play and be a good championship striker? I don't know. You never know. But there are similarities there with Darius Henderson, particularly with that early November two-goal effort very late on to win a game from 1-0 down. You never know. You never know. So we'll see what happens with Clark. But yesterday, Darius Henderson was a reasonable striker for Reading at the time for the level that we were playing at.
Yeah, that's a very accidental but quite nice sort of circle that we've formed there. So I'll take that. And with that in mind, let's go into news bites and talk about what else has been going on around the club in the last week or so.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
I'll update you first off with the other Reading football teams. We spoke last week about how it's not been a particularly good period for the academy teams. Obviously, the under-23s didn't have Jamari Clark playing for them last Monday. They got beat 3-0 by Sunderland. They've next got Villa at the Select Car Leasing Stadium on Monday, November the 8th. That's a 7 p.m. kickoff and it is free. I think it's free parking as well, so just rock up for that if you've got Monday evening off and you fancy going down to watch them play Aston Villa in the under-23s. The under-18s lost 1-0 to Arsenal today. They've got an international break now until November 20th. And the women's team, their international break ends tomorrow as we record this. They're away to Birmingham. Over the international break, they've got quite a few games because, you know, their international break was just before the men's game. So they've got West Ham away on the 14th. Then in the Cup, they've got Palace on the 17th. And then on the 21st of November, Sunday, 2 p.m. kickoff at the Select Car Leasing Stadium is Brighton at home in the WSL. So get yourself down to that, which I guess is the day after the Nottingham Forest game, in fact. So that's the next time they're at home, is the 21st. Also in the news this week, Luke Southwood is calling up, or it has been called up, by the Northern Ireland men's team. So he's looking to make waves in international football with Northern Ireland. They've got a young Celtic goalkeeper and Bailey Peacock Farrell, the Burnley goalkeeper, amongst their ranks. So definitely an opportunity for him if he wants to get into the international game and progress with that. He obviously won, if you remember, the England under-20s World Cup as the kind of third choice goalkeeper for England. I think Dominic Calvert-Lewin, a couple of decent players in that team, so he was part of that. Now he's going with Northern Ireland. And finally, wanted to talk to Handbags because he had a little trip of his own down to the training ground about a week or so ago now with his two lads. And you were saying this was for the Young Royals, this is kind of being promoted. You might have seen it on the club's media. So I'll hand over to you to just give us a bit of an insight into your day and also into Bearwood, because the new training ground, we don't really know too much about it.
No, absolutely. I was told by Rob Coleman, who's the customer services manager, that myself and my two boys were the first people who weren't affiliated to the club to have actually seen it. I was invited down with my two boys really for the Young Royals because obviously my boys are naturally Young Royals. I wouldn't have it any other way. And because I was known to the club, they invited me down for a morning, rocked up, and you know, sort of spent a little bit of time in the first team building, and yeah, met the manager and the coaching staff. We were involved in the coaching meeting in the morning when pre-training. There were only 9 players actually training that day because of the injuries. I think Araruna would have trained, but he played for the under-23s the day before, so they would have had 10. But it was interesting to see how they dealt with that. And just sort of met some of the players as they filtered into the first team restaurant, which is first team only first team players and coaching staff are allowed in there to be fed. So it was a privilege to be allowed in there, to be brutally honest with you. But when it comes to the players and the manager, there didn't seem to be any egos. There didn't seem to be any yeah, airs or graces. It was you know, everybody was genuinely sort of pleased to welcome us. And as you see on the video, Luke Southwood in particular and Liam Moore were very very forthcoming. The manager himself, Pauno, I had a very good and enlightening chat with Quinton Fortune as well. When we got there, just let my boys to sort of wander off and do what they wanted to do. And I took the time to talk a little bit with Quinton himself, which was interesting to say the least, to get his views of Old Trafford and his career and his coaching career as well. And as a coach myself, because I coach under eights, it was good to actually witness a professional training session. Yeah, and it was good to see that the first team players were already too pleased and welcoming and getting my two boys involved. It was lovely to see Liam Moore flying around in the goal with my two boys, and Luke Southwood taking a little bit of time out of his own little session with the goalkeeping to sort of knock a ball about with both of them. It was rather good. I did bring my own boots and my own training gear, but regrettably I wasn't allowed to take part. But hey ho, I'm not entirely sure how I'd have stacked up against 9 professional, seasoned professional players.
I was going to say, if they needed to complete a team, then you'd have been ideally placed.
yeah. I mean, well, as a sort of Sunday league professional and with a wand of a left foot, or Sunday league wand of a left foot, I'd have happily taken part. But regrettably, I don't think the insurance would have covered me if I'd have got injured. So, it was a genuinely good day, and it was good to see the women come across as well. Kelly Chambers and the manager of the women came across with 3 of their players as well. And you know, it's frustrating because I want to get down and actually see a women's game, but unfortunately they usually kick off at 2 o'clock on a Tuesday. And I live an hour away from Reading as well now. So, on a decent day. And with two boys that kick off at sort of 10:30 and 12:30, it makes it difficult to get down there. So, it's not that I'm sort of dismissing the women at all. I'd love to get down there. But, you know, with my two boys playing, it just makes it that little bit more difficult. And particularly, you know, money's always tight, particularly now with fuel prices and whatnot, and I live alone. It just makes it a little bit more difficult to get down there. So, but yeah, we'll get down there one day to see the women and reintroduce ourselves, because it was nice of them to come across to the men's building and sort of introduce themselves and say hello.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. I mean, I spent a little bit of time at Hogwood, the old training ground, and it was very much a bit of like, temporary sort of buildings. It kind of reminded me of my old school before they knocked it down and rebuilt it out of wood. And it was a little bit of not an old-fashioned sort of training ground, but it didn't have a great feel of permanence to it. And I suppose that's what Bearwood has. It must have felt like a proper training facility that was there. You know, that was its purpose, and it obviously serves a lot of teams and you know, was a good setup in that sense.
Absolutely, yeah. There is that, like the word that you use there, permanence, is perfect, really, because the first team building is it's a great facility, and the women, there's almost like a sort of a courtyard, and the women's buildings are just across the other side of the courtyard. They have, well, it's literally the old stables of the Bearwood estate, but they've been obviously converted to proper training buildings, offices and whatnot, and the pitches themselves they're like carpets. It's unreal, and you know, I would have killed to have played on surfaces like that as a young player, or as a player at all, to have the opportunity to play on pitches like that. It's interesting because they're all marked out different ways. They're not just sort of your standard football pitches. They've got two training pitches, one with sort of lengthway alleyways, to presumably deal with width, and they've got one with a standard football pitch sort of split into thirds, or quarters, should I say, which is, well, yeah, it doesn't take a genius to work out what that one's all about. So they've got them all marked out in different ways to deal with the training. They've got the actual sort of academy pitch as well, which reminded me a lot of when I played in Germany. I lived in Germany for 18 months. I played there, and every club in Germany has a pitch like, or a facility. It's literally sports clubs, and they have sort of well-tended pitches. You're not allowed on the pitch unless you're actually playing a match, you know, with you know, the sort of classic old dugouts and whatnot. So it reminded me of that 20 years ago, the club had. It was, yeah, the actual facility itself is absolutely immense. And looking at the, you know, inside the building, you know, with the gym, we met Yaku Meite, who was on an exercise bike, obviously doing some that day, because we saw him on a treadmill as well. So he was obviously doing some CV work, building up his CV fitness. A few other players. There was met John Swift. He was in there after the training session doing. He was obviously, to anybody who wasn't there, of course, he was receiving a massage after the training session. There were a couple of players having treatment for a couple of little niggles. It was good. It was really, really good, really enlightening. I only wish that I'd had an opportunity to speak to Pauno on a one-to-one basis, which I didn't have, which was a bit of a shame. But, you know, the guy's a busy man. So, you know, he obviously had issues to deal with in terms of the training session, in terms of the injured players. And he'd also brought his son in as well. If you look on the video, there's a third child within the video. That is actually Valko Panovic's son, Peter. My boys played football with him. And Paolo Jr. is apparently in the academy as well. So, I don't. In terms of the actual sort of gameplay with my boys and Paolo Jr., I think they kind of stood up quite well. It was rather nice that they were able to do that.
Oh, well, the future's bright in that case. We'll have handbags down the left and right wing and Paolo in the middle for years to come.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that'll do me. I'm happy with that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, it genuinely sounds really good. And I'm really pleased with the club taking the time to do this sort of thing as well. Like, I know... the fan engagement stuff is kind of still rumbling along, and there's Star as well trying to get more involved. And you know, as you say, being not many people have been able to go to the training ground, largely because of COVID, obviously. And that probably will be the case for a little while to come. But being able to get these things in and just to show fans what's going on behind the scenes, I know that it's certainly something that the club want to do more of, and just it's just about kind of getting it all together and getting over the line. So it's great to hear that has all gone well. Let's get back to some match action in just a moment. We'll go on to Big Match Preview and talk about what's coming up after the international break.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
So we've got two home games to look forward to later in the month. November 20th, that's a Saturday 3 p.m. kickoff against Nottingham Forest. November 23rd, Sheffield United, an 8 p.m. kickoff in midweek. These are kind of two tricky home games. I mean, they're all difficult at this level to some extent, but lots of goals have been going in these both of these teams' games, actually. Forest won 3-0 at home to Preston today. They're actually the third best away team in the league, according to the stats. Sheffield United lost 3-1 away at Blackburn. They've not won in three games. Of course, that'll be potentially different by the time they get to us, because they've got Coventry at home on the Saturday before the midweek game. So, I mean, handbags, we're 16th. You know, with playing teams that are 13th and 18th, it's not really, I don't think it's right to assume that we can just kind of scoop two easy wins in these games. But generally speaking, Reading at home have been all right. We've just got to see if we can get a couple of players back, keep going with a bit of confidence. Obviously, we've got confidence for 2 weeks now. There's no reason to not have that. And just go and see how we perform on the day and maybe get a good drop of the ball, maybe, you know, find margins here and there. And then Reading can be looking at 4 or 6 points out of these games and everything will be pretty hunky-dory.
Pretty much. I mean, you've got to remember that we will hopefully have three or four players back as well from the injury list, and not actually have any more injuries come back from the international break. That's obviously a critical factor. Forest, in particular, one that I don't know what to expect. Steve Cooper's taken over. They've been fairly comfortable in most games except the Fulham game, which by all accounts was never a 4-0. They didn't look overly impressive against QPR on the TV. But you know, they've won 5 of 7 under Steve Cooper. So that's one that is tricky, to say the least. Sheffield United are another one. You've got to take a look at their manager. The guy has got two teams promoted from the Championship, Watford and Fulham. Slavisa Jokanović is a man who I would happily have in charge of Reading, should we be in a position where we find ourselves needing a manager. I think Sheffield, they're a team that are underperforming, and I think that they are another one. Again, it's difficult to predict exactly what's going to happen in that one. They are two games that could go either way, but as we get stronger with our squad, there's no reason to expect that we will at the very, very least run them close and get points from each game.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? I think it's going to be a case of it being pretty tight, generally speaking. And I mean, that Forest game, I think, is the harder of the two for the obvious reasons, as we just kind of mentioned there. In terms of players that might be coming back, I think it's Drinkwater and McIntyre, the ones who are maybe closest to it. Rinomota, there's a kind of maybe over him. But generally speaking, I think, honestly, as much as we kind of want all of the players back, and we have got a lot of players out still, it can't play that down. I do think that even just a couple will make a big difference to these games, because most of the players, I think I'm not Chet, but Yeardom and Rahman, usually the ones who go away, potentially Puskas. Generally speaking, no one else is going to go away with their internationals. So people should come into this game pretty well rested. And then it's just a case of turning up on the day. In terms of predictions, yourself, Handbags, Westy and Adam all got 1-0 against Millwall. Nobody took a win against Birmingham. So the current standings, Westy 17, Ollie 13, Adam 12, yourself, Handbags on 10, Ben 7, myself and Sim pulling up the bottom.
Westy got 17 points.
Oh, I know. It's because there's been a couple recently that have just, as I say, like that 1-0. I think he got we had a 3-1 or something like that recently that he got, or maybe the Bournemouth game, I think he got. Yeah, but it's very disappointing for myself as well, because I'm bottom on 6 points. And typically, I mean,
I thought I was doing all right with 9 points or 10 points. I thought I'd done reasonably well.
I know.
Bloody hell.
It just shows, how this is. I mean, for me, there was a year when I think I cruised to the title, or got near cruising to the title or something like that, a couple of years ago. But so I do this, obviously, and then there's Super Six, and then there's Fantasy Premier League. The only real things that I kind of put effort into thinking about what I'm going to do. And I've never had all three do well at the same time. And this year, it's Super Six I'm doing all right in. Never been that great at Super Six previously. This year, Super Six is all right. And then the Tyler Sten Prediction League, which in theory I should be better at, I've been much worse at. So, you know, that's just how it goes sometimes. But as an early prediction for Forest, then what are you going to say?
Blimey. Okay. Could I caveat this? I'm going to caveat this. I'm going to go, based on the feel-good factor that we've had today, I'm going to go 2-0 win, but I'm going to reserve the right to change that dependent on team injuries in the injury situation, given that just how bad it's bloody well been over the last 6 months or so.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. Obviously, we can change these all the way up until, I mean, even after the team, I'm always happy for people to change it as long as the game hasn't kicked off. I think, I mean, I've shot myself in the foot in a way, because of both of the games this last week, I predicted 1-1 and predicting draws in itself is a little bit of a fool's gold kind of idea. And yet I think this game could finish 1-1. So I'm probably going to have to sit on the fence. I won't, if it doesn't come off this time, then I'll stop doing it for a few weeks and then we'll probably draw.
Better
games.
Read too many splinters.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, looking at our record in particular, I mean, we've only had one draw all season. And I mean, Forest had four, so not too many more. But yeah, it is an interesting one that Reading are kind of like. I mean, today's game and probably the Blackpool game and maybe even the Millwall game, all really good examples of a game that so easily could have ended up level, and yet we somehow managed to lose two and win one of them. So I'm going to tentatively say 1-1, and I'll remain bottom of the standings.
Yeah, you said the Barnsley game as well in there, the Borough game, the games that you could argue should have been draws, but we actually ended up winning. So
yeah, absolutely. No, it does. It does. So that's, yeah, so we'll be back then. That does mean, with it being the international break, we will take a week off, barring anything spectacular or otherwise happening. Obviously, if there's some sort of, you know, point deduction does land or anything, we'll try and put together an emergency podcast for you. But otherwise, we'll jump into a little bit of winter hibernation for the next week or so. Handbags, as ever, a huge pleasure having you on this week, mate.
Pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
And we will be back in about a fortnight. And isn't it just so nice that we can go into this fortnight? There's no questions over Paolo. There's no questions over Reading's future in this league. There's no questions over relegation zone for the time being. It's just all a situation that we're all very familiar with, of Reading, just when you doubt them the most, they'll pull out something and keep us smiling for the international break to come. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back, as I say, in a couple of weeks' time. Enjoy the international break. Enjoy the easy wins for England, if that's what you're inclined to do. And enjoy this 2-1 win for the next couple of weeks. Come on, you arse.
Oh, you arse. You smile.